The next thing the dictionary tells you is the part of speech, whether the word is a noun, verb, adjective, adverb, and so on. Mainly, this helps you save time finding the right entry. For example, if you look up the word level, you will find three listings for the noun, the verb, and the adjective. The part of speech label directs you quickly to the definition you need. Usually before, but sometimes after the definition, is another useful bit of information that most people, unfortunately, can't be bothered with. The etymology. That's E-T-Y-M-O-L-O-G-Y. Etymology is the history of a word, or the study of the history of words. It is often confused in pronunciation with entomology, which means the study of insects. I have heard numerous college-educated professionals say entomology when they meant etymology. You see how a little slip of the tongue can result in a serious mistake? Remember, there is no N in etymology. If you are committed to building a powerful vocabulary, you should take the time to read the etymology of each word you look up in the dictionary. At first, the foreign words will seem strange, but soon you will begin to see patterns and recognize relationships that will give you deeper insight into the language and help you decipher the meanings of unfamiliar words. For example, the combining form mal, M-A-L, comes from the Latin malus, bad, evil. In English, when mal appears in a word, it means bad, inadequate, or abnormal, as in malpractice, bad practice, maladjustment, inadequate adjustment, and malformation, abnormal formation. Once you're familiar with mal, you have a clue to help you deduce the meanings of the harder words malefactor, a bad person, evildoer, criminal. Maladroit, inadequately skilled, clumsy, awkward. And malapropos, not normal or appropriate to the situation. If vocabulary is the key to success, then etymology, word history, is the key to successfully building a large and exact vocabulary. Now let's talk about the information everyone associates with a dictionary, definition. I want to stress here that you should always read all the definitions of the word you are looking up. Most people tend to skip to the definition that fits what they have just read or written. Don't sell yourself short. Read the entire entry. A word may have 2 or 3 or even 10 different senses. Learning the other meanings of a word is like learning several new words instead of just one. While we're on the subject of definition, let me introduce you to the words denotation and connotation. The denotation of a word is its precise, explicit meaning, its dictionary definition. The connotation of a word is its implied meaning, including all the ideas, images, and emotions the word suggests. The corresponding verbs are denote and connote. In The Careful Writer, Theodore Bernstein nicely distinguishes the two words. Denote means, connote implies, writes Bernstein. To denote is to furnish a factual, exact definition. To connote embraces all the overtones, flavors, and suggestions that are not explicit in the purely minimal dictionary definitions. In short, knowing the denotation of a word helps us use it with precision and clarity. Grasping its connotation helps us use it to better effect, with greater sensitivity, wit, or power. Dictionary definitions stick chiefly to denotation. The connotation is something you'll have to wrestle with on your own. As you acquire new words and learn what they denote, take care to consider what they connote, not only to you, but to others. Two more useful features in today's dictionaries are usage notes and synonym studies. Most desk dictionaries include brief remarks on the proper and improper use of certain controversial words. If you see a usage note after a dictionary entry, be sure to read it. The advice is an invaluable part of learning how to use the language well. Be apprised, however, that the opinions given in usage notes vary from dictionary to dictionary. Some are more strict and others more permissive. If possible, compare notes in two or more dictionaries, and when in doubt, take the cautious route and avoid any usage that seems questionable or that you think others may find objectionable. Now, let me ask you this. Off the top of your head, can you differentiate the words gather, collect, assemble, congregate, accumulate, amass, marshal, and rally? Reading your dictionary's synonym studies will help you gain insight into the subtle differences in meaning among these and other groups of closely related words, which in turn will help you make precise distinctions in your choice of words. The last dictionary feature I'd like to bring to your attention is the supplement on style. Nearly every current desktop dictionary has one, yet most people have no idea this invaluable resource is there. Check your dictionary's table of contents to find out where these few priceless pages are hidden. The style guide explains in simple terms the rudiments of punctuation, capitalization, documentation of source material in footnotes and bibliographies, and proper forms of address. I cannot overemphasize the importance of this information. Anyone who puts pen to paper or fingers to typewriter or computer keyboard must have a solid sense of where to place commas and semicolons, how to use single and double quotation marks, and when not to capitalize. Don't be caught with your periods or commas outside your quotation marks. Consult your dictionary's style guide whenever you have the slightest doubt about the mechanics of writing. The point of all this talk about what's inside your dictionary is to impress upon you how much more you can learn from that book than simply what words mean and how they are spelled. The dictionary is there to help you at every step of your journey toward mastery of the language, so use it often and enjoy the process of discovery. And while you're exploring the dictionary, if you're confused by any of the symbols, abbreviations, or labels you come across, all you have to do is consult the explanatory notes printed in the front of the book. Now let's get back to the business of building your vocabulary. Here are the first 10 keywords in Level 3. Word 1. Defray. D-E-F-R-A-Y. To pay. Provide money for. Cover the cost or expenses of. The words pay and defray are synonymous, but they are not interchangeable. You pay for a meal in a restaurant. You don't defray it. You pay your bills. You don't defray them. In current usage, defray means to cover the cost or expense of something, especially to provide money for a portion of that cost or expense. For example, you might use an income tax refund to help defray the expense of a trip to Europe. A nonprofit corporation that receives a grant or donation might use it to defray the cost of office equipment and supplies. Word 2. Taciturn. T-A-C-I-T-U-R-N. Silent. Not talkative. Holding one's tongue. Reserved. Uncommunicative. Reticent. Challenging antonyms of taciturn include garrulous, loquacious, effusive, E-F-F-U-S-I-V-E, and voluble, V-O-L-U-B-L-E. Taciturn comes from the same Latin root as tacit, word 9 in Level 2. Tacit means unspoken, done or made in silence. Taciturn means silent by nature, preferring not to speak. Taciturn and reticent both mean not talkative, uncommunicative. Reticent suggests a disinclination to express one's feelings or supply information. Taciturn refers to a person who is habitually silent and withdrawn. Word 3. Terse. T-E-R-S-E. Brief and to the point. Free of superfluous words. expressed in a pointed and polished way. More difficult synonyms of terse include concise, pithy, succinct, and laconic, L-A-C-O-N-I-C. Antonyms include long-winded, redundant, prolix, and verbose, word 30 of level 2. The words concise, succinct, and terse all suggest brevity, expressing something in a brief and direct way. Concise implies eliminating anything unnecessary or superfluous. Her presentation was persuasive and concise. Succinct implies getting the point across in the fewest possible words. An effective letter to the editor must be succinct. By the way, I'm sure you've heard the beastly mispronunciation, succinct, which in recent years has become widespread among educated speakers. We don't say accident for accident, accept for accept, or secede for succeed. So there's no logical reason for saying succinct. Take care to pronounce the double C like KS, succinct. But let's get back to our keyword, terse. Terse writing or speech is brief, pointed, and polished. It communicates smoothly and effectively, without digressions or excess words. Terse may also suggest expression that is blunt or brusque. A terse reply is brief and pointed, but it stops just short of being rude. Word 4. Boon. B-O-O-N. A blessing, timely and welcome benefit. Something beneficial bestowed upon one. Something to be thankful for. A boon once meant a favor or request. In stories of yore, of time long past, knights, courtiers, and all manner of supplicants would bow before their kings and queens and say, "As your humble servant, I beseech you to grant me this boon." Are you wondering what the word supplicant means? A supplicant is a person who begs for something, and supplication is the act of begging for something humbly and earnestly. Getting back to boon, the meaning favor, request is now archaic or old-fashioned, and today boon is used to mean a blessing, a timely and welcome benefit, something to be thankful for, as in, "This good weather is a boon. His efforts were a boon to their enterprise." Word 5. Proletariat. P-R-O-L-E-T-A-R-I-A-T. The working class, especially the industrial wage-earning class, which earns its living by manual labor. The adjective is proletarian, of or relating to the working class. In the philosophy of Karl Marx, the famous exponent of communism, the proletariat comprises those members of society without property or capital who must sell their labor to survive. Proletariat comes through French from the Latin proletarius, which means a Roman citizen of the lowest class. Today, the word is still used to mean the lowest and poorest class of people in any society. Word 6. Heterogeneous. H-E-T-E-R-O-G-E-N-E-O-U-S. Varied, composed of parts of different kinds, made up of unrelated or diverse elements, mixed, dissimilar, miscellaneous. The opposite of heterogeneous is homogeneous, of the same or similar nature or kind. The prefix homo means same, similar, like, as in homosexual, attracted to the same sex. Homogenize, to blend, make similar or homogeneous. And homonym, a word that is pronounced the same as another word, but that has a different origin and meaning, such as fair, F-A-I-R, and fair, F-A-R-E. The prefix hetero means other, different, unlike, as in heterosexual, attracted to the other sex. Heterodox, having an opinion different from the accepted opinion, the opposite of orthodox. And heterogeneous, varied, dissimilar, diverse, consisting of different elements or kinds. Word 7. Pittance. P-I-T-T-A-N-C-E. A small amount, portion, or share, especially a small or meager amount of money. Her inheritance was only a pittance. He received a pittance for his services. Some people will work for a pittance if the job is rewarding. Think of the pit of a fruit, which is small and hard, and you'll easily remember that a pittance is a small amount of money that is hard to live on. Word 8. Glib. G-L-I-B. Smooth-spoken, speaking in a ready, fluent manner, with natural or offhand ease. Talkative in a nonchalant way. Synonyms of glib include suave, facile, bland, voluble, flippant, and unctuous. U-N-C-T-U-O-U-S. By the way, I really like the word unctuous. It comes from the Latin ungere, to anoint, which is also the source of the English word unguent, a medicinal ointment, salve. By derivation, unctuous means oily, fatty, having a greasy or soapy feel. And today, unctuous is used to mean having a slimy, slippery, or smarmy manner. The unctuous person appears agreeable or earnest, but in an affected, self-serving, and insincere way. Our keyword, glib, also has a slightly unpleasant aroma. In general, glib refers to the ability to speak or to something spoken in a smooth, easy, nonchalant way. But the word usually suggests a manner that is too smooth and easy to be convincing. Glib answers may be thoughtless, ill-considered. Glib proposals or solutions may be superficial. And a glib salesperson or a glib politician may be persuasive, but insincere. Word 9. Penchant. P-E-N-C-H-A-N-T. A liking, leaning, strong inclination, decided taste. A penchant for sports. A penchant for American poetry. A penchant for spicy food. More difficult synonyms of penchant include propensity, a profound, often irresistible inclination, and proclivity, a strong natural or habitual tendency, especially towards something objectionable or wicked. Career criminals have a proclivity for violence. Successful business people have a propensity for discerning the bottom line and making a profit. And many people have a penchant for chocolate, a strong liking, decided taste. Word 10. Solicitous. S-O-L-I-C-I-T-O-U-S. Concerned, showing care and attention, especially in a worried, anxious, or fearful way. Solicitous suggests great concern, usually displayed by thoughtful care or hovering attention. In this sense, solicitous may be followed by the prepositions of, for, or about. One may be solicitous about the outcome of an event, solicitous of a child, or solicitous for the welfare of another. Solicitous may also be used to mean eager, full of desire, willing. In this slightly different sense, it is followed by the preposition to, and still conveys anxious concern. solicitous to gain the advantage, solicitous to know the results of the election, solicitous to go ahead with the plan.
Let's review the 10 key words you've just learned. Listen carefully to the following questions. After each one, decide whether the correct answer is yes or no. Would a year-end bonus help defray your holiday expenses? Yes, it certainly would. Defray means to pay, provide money for, cover the cost or expenses of. Is a garrulous or loquacious person also taciturn? No. Garrulous and loquacious mean talkative. Taciturn means habitually silent, uncommunicative, reticent. Is a terse speaker long-winded and tedious? No. Terse means brief and to the point, expressed in a pointed and polished way. Would winning the lottery be a boon? Yes, you bet it would. A boon is a blessing, something to be thankful for, a timely and welcome benefit. Is the aristocracy the opposite of the proletariat? Yes, aristocracy means literally rule by the best persons. The aristocracy comprises the wealthiest and most powerful members of society. The proletariat is the working or wage-earning class, which comprises the poorest and least powerful members of society. Is American society heterogeneous? Yes, it is. Heterogeneous means varied, mixed, composed of different kinds, made up of unrelated or diverse elements. Some people will work for a pittance if the job is rewarding. Yes, a pittance is a small amount of money. Is a glib speaker earnest and excited? No, glib means smooth-spoken, speaking fluently in an easy, offhand manner, talkative in a nonchalant way. When you have a penchant for something, do you find it irritating or disagreeable? No. A penchant is a liking, strong inclination, decided taste for something. Can you be solicitous about someone's health? Yes, solicitous means concerned, showing care and attention, especially in a worried, anxious, or fearful way. That concludes the review for this section.
Let's take a look now at the first feature for Level 3, a dictum on diction. A dictum, spelled D-I-C-T-U-M, is a formal pronouncement, an official opinion or decree. The plural is dicta, D-I-C-T-A. So here's my dictum on diction. The word diction is often used today to mean vocal expression, specifically one's enunciation, the clarity and distinctness of one's speech. But the traditional meaning of the word, which is still in good standing, refers to one's selection of words with regard to clarity, accuracy, and variety. Your diction is your choice of words, manner of expression. It differs from your vocabulary, which is the entire stock of words you possess. Good diction means using language that is clear, accurate, varied, and apposite. A-P-P-O-S-I-T-E. Apposite means both relevant and appropriate. Poor diction means using a word or phrase in the wrong way or the wrong place, creating an inappropriate or illogical effect. The word irregardless is a classic example of poor diction. Grammarians have railed against this non-standard word for years, but like a hardy cockroach, it continues to crawl out of the illiterate woodwork into the light of conversation, and occasionally into the pages of the newspaper. The proper word is regardless, which means without regard. Adding the privative or negative prefix IR to regardless creates a double negative. Irregardless therefore means not without regard, or more simply, with concern for. Of course, that's just the opposite of what those who use the non-word irregardless intend it to mean. The word peruse, P-E-R-U-S-E, also has become the victim of mounting abuse. Peruse once meant to use up, wear out, for the prefix per, P-E-R, means thoroughly, throughout, through to the end. You can see the prefix per at work in the familiar words perfect, which combines per, thoroughly, with the Latin facere, to make, and perennial, from per, throughout, and the Latin annus, a year. Thus, by derivation, perfect means thoroughly made, and perennial means throughout the year. But let's get back to peruse. In its traditional and still correct sense, peruse is a lovely word that means to read carefully and critically, examine closely, read through to the end. But in recent years, people have begun using peruse to mean skim, browse, dip into or glance through. Here's a sentence that misuses peruse, which I found in a newspaper story on book collectors. Buying at the rate of 50 books a week has clearly made it impossible for him to read most of his purchases, though he strives at least to peruse each one. Properly, the sentence should read like this. Buying at the rate of 50 books a week has clearly made it impossible for him to peruse most of his purchases, though he strives at least to skim each one. Poor diction is painfully apparent in the trendy substitution of the word reticent for reluctant. We discussed reticent earlier. Do you remember what it means? Not talkative. Not disposed to speak one's mind. It's a synonym of taciturn, which you just learned means habitually silent or reserved. Reticent has come to be used by many educated speakers in place of the word reluctant. They say, I am reticent to talk about it, or he is reticent to take action. This substitution is a prime example of what I call the sounds-like syndrome, where a fancier word that sounds like a simpler word gradually takes over the simpler word's meaning, and sometimes loses its own specific meaning. The confusion between reticent and reluctant is now so common that some dictionaries list them as synonyms. You should interpret that as recognition of the frequency of the error, rather than as justification for committing it yourself. Don't use reticent when you mean reluctant. You cannot be reticent to do something, or reticent to speak. You can only be reluctant. A reluctant person is hesitant, disinclined, unwilling to do something. A reticent person is reluctant to speak. Another error of diction I am not reluctant to expose is the use of loathe for loath. I have heard some of the most prominent broadcasters on radio and TV confuse and mispronounce these words. Loath, L-O-A-T-H, is a strong synonym of reluctant. When you are loath to do or say something, you are reluctant almost to the point of aversion or disgust. The verb to loathe, L-O-A-T-H-E, means to hate, despise. When you loathe something, you find it disgusting or despicable. Have you also noticed the difference in pronunciation? The T-H in these words has a different sound. Do not say you are loath to do something. Say you are loath to do it. Last but not least, the words emulate and imitate are frequently confused. To imitate is to follow the example of, take as a model. If you imitate a person, you act the same way that person acts. To emulate means to strive to equal or excel. If you emulate a person, you try to surpass or outdo that person's ability or achievement. Thus, a son may imitate his father's mannerisms, but emulate his skill in driving a car. A painter may imitate a masterpiece or attempt to emulate the master. Your diction is important because it reflects the way you think. In many situations, people judge you on your choice of words. If you loathe ignorance but are loath to learn, you're not going to go very far. To make a favorable impression, you must avoid imitating the poor habits of others and emulate the writers and speakers you admire. And one of the best ways to improve your diction is to read widely and peruse the dictionary. Let's return now to the verbal advantage vocabulary. Here are the next 10 keywords in Level 3. Word 11. Circumscribe. CIRCUMSCRIBE. To limit, restrict, confine, hem in, fix the boundaries of. The scribe in circumscribe means to write, draw, and circum, C-I-R-C-U-M, means around. Literally, circumscribe means to draw a line around, and circle. Figuratively, it means to enclose within narrow limits, restrict, confine. The circumscribed routine of daily life. A law that circumscribes certain rights. You can see the combining form circum at work in many English words. Circumstance combines circum, around, with the Latin stare, to stand, and means literally that which stands around. Hence, a condition or factor influencing a situation or surrounding an event. Circumcision combines circum with incision to mean literally a cutting around. Circumvent combines circum, around, with the Latin venire, to go, and means to go around, bypass, especially in a clever or resourceful way. She had to circumvent a lot of red tape to get the job done. From this somewhat circumlocutory or roundabout discussion, can you guess the meaning of circumnavigate? That's right. It means to navigate or sail around, as to circumnavigate the earth. Our keyword, circumscribe, means literally to draw a line around, hence to enclose within narrow limits, fix the boundaries of. A limited vocabulary can circumscribe your career and undermine your chances for success.
To continue with Level 3, Word 12, please fast forward the tape and turn to Side 10.